Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And welcome to another edition of Sports Cage. I'm Don Hewitt, and I'm joined by an outstanding co-host, I must say, in Pete Pascoe. I'll talk about Pete in a moment. Sports Cage is brought to you by Nelson Homes, supplying home packages and RTMs that's ready to move for over 65 years. And I was trying to figure out how to describe Pete Pascoe, and I came up with he's just a general man about town.
Seems fair.
That's what I came up with.
No, okay.
And I think that describes you, Pete, because lots of people know you're a general man about town.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Not really famous or infamous, just sort of.
Well, you're on Sports Cage. You have some fame there.
Well, true.
I would suggest.
True, I guess. Well, it could also lead to infamy, depending on who you are. But that's a whole other issue.
Well, we've got a really good show, action-packed show for sure, Pete. We've got Chris Getzlaff joining us at the top of the show, as well as Indian Head Bronc High School football coach Tim Klein to talk about a fundraiser in Indian Head at 3:30. Jack from Calgary that we know on the roundtable, Jack Newman, he's going to talk to us about how did the Rough Riders manage to sign Ryan Sevier, because Jack knows him really well from his Dino days. That's both from their Dino days, Sevier and Jack. And we might touch on a little bit of the Cactus League in Phoenix, because it's something that's full of Rider ball caps and Saskatchewan license plates in the parking lots. That's, of course, the preseason games in Phoenix. And it's just sort of an interesting perspective about, you know, the snowbirds enjoying life from Saskatchewan in Arizona. But you don't have to be a snowbird. I used to go down to Cactus League games when I was, you know, still working and reasonably young, and it's still a lot of fun. It doesn't matter, really. At 4 o'clock, Farhan Lodgy will join us to talk about, you know, that big ball game in Victoria between the BC Lions and the Ottawa Red Blacks, and all the goings-on around the CFL and sports with Farhan. At 4:30, I think we've got Chase the Ice with Travis. 4:45, the voice of the Prince Albert Raiders, Nolan Colwell. Of course, the Raiders facing elimination tonight at the hands of the Saskatoon Blades. And don't forget, Pete, that both the Swift Current Broncos and Moose Jaw Warriors swept their first-round series going into the WHL East semifinals
at 5 o'clock. And they'll go head-to-head next series.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
That's crazy. At 5 o'clock, we've got Bob Strum, former general manager of the Regina Pats, to talk hockey. And at 5:30, Dave Campbell, the Elks color man. So we got lots of things going on for sure. And right now, we are going to try to dial up Chris Getzlaff. Give me a second or two, Pete.
Sure.
Because we're having a few problems here. I think Chris might have his voicemail on. And we're trying to get through to you if you're hearing or listening,
looks
Chris.
Looks like we're going to hear from him in about there, 5 minutes.
Here he comes.
5 minutes. We can fill for 5 minutes.
Yes. I'm just texting him now. This is live radio, by the way.
Yep. We're operating without a net.
Yes. So there we go. We're just sending a text to Chris. Now, let's just talk about Chris for a moment. You know, a former member of both Regina Thunder and U of R Rams. He spent a decade in the CFL, mostly with the Rough Riders. Chris scored a touchdown in his first game, starting with Saskatchewan, and the rest, as they say, is history. Chris ended up his career with over 6,000 receiving yards and 41 touchdowns. Simply put, with those 41 touchdowns, he was a money player, a gritty guy that would get to the end zone when you needed him to get there. 2007 was a very good year for the Regina-based Getzlaf family, if you remember, Pete, because Chris earned a Grey Cup ring while his brother Ryan won a Stanley Cup.
Not bad.
And I don't know which ring is bigger, the Ducks winning the Stanley Cup or the Rough Rider 2007 Grey Cup ring. I don't know which is bigger, because I know Jim Hobson really did up the 2007 Grey Cup ring really well. And tonight in Indian Head from 5 to 9 o'clock at the Grand Avenue Inn, an evening with Chris Getzlaf. Tickets, well, are $30 and still available. You get a steak dinner, a 50-50 draw, silent auction, door prizes. And above all, you get to talk to Chris Getzlaf. We're hoping to get to talk to Chris Getzlaf.
Do we have to pay?
If you'd like to buy a ticket for tonight, it's not too late. Call the Grand Avenue Inn at 306-695-2163. You can also call Virginia Horseman in Indian Head at 306-695-7871. For Virginia, that again is 306-695-7871. And she'll sell you a ticket to this fundraiser tonight for Indian Head. I was just going to ask you, Alan, do we have the coach on? Do we have Tim Klein on the air? No, we don't have Tim Klein? Okay. We're going to try to get Tim Klein on the air, the head coach of the Indian Head High School Bronc football team. And Pete, you're a high school football coach yourself.
True enough.
And you know the ups and the downs about high school football, just like Tim would know. I mean, you being at Sheldon, what did you make the city final a year ago? And this past year, you didn't win a game. It's sort of like,
how's that for tough, topsy-turvy?
Hey,
oh, absolutely. You never know exactly what you're going to get, depending on which kids show up. Sometimes you get some good players and they decide, oh, it's grade 12, I'm going to focus on other things. That happens. That's tough, but that's life.
Okay, we got Tim Klein, I hope, on the air. Do we, Alan, we got Tim Klein on the air? Okay, Tim, we're having trouble hooking up with Chris Getzlaf. So tell us about what you're up to in Indian Head right now. What's this fundraiser all about?
Well, we decided a couple of years ago, actually, it's been on our radar for quite a long time to do a field improvement project. We've been watering our field with basically one long hose and one sprinkler, and we've been changing it every 3 hours in the summer, and it's a little bit tedious. And I mean, the fields look great when we get to fall, but we decided it was time that we made changes, and we thought, well, if you're going to make one change, you might as well go big or go home.
Right.
So, we have just completed a major renovation of our field. We've added a practice field. We've irrigated both of those. We've added permanent lighting, and coming up here, I just saw a picture of them this morning. We have some of the old Taylor Field bleachers that we are fabricating into permanent bleachers for our field. So it's a pretty exciting time for us.
So let me get this straight, sir. You have done the field, and the fundraiser is about paying the bill?
Yes. Okay. We have, you know, the field was the whole renovation project, including bleachers and lights and everything, was $290,000. Thus far, we've raised $187,000. We've had some just amazing sponsors. And so we have $103,000 that we're still going to raise. We're anticipating, hoping to raise about $45,000 this year. The steak night, that's going to be next Friday. That's part of this. And we're doing a number of different things to try and raise the money to pay off the rest. But we thought if we were going to do it now, the lights would have been about 25% more if we would have waited till this year to purchase them. So we just decided, you know, it was financially viable and probably the right decision to make at that time.
That sounds cool. Now, we just heard that Chris needs five more minutes. We'll try to get him on in 5 minutes so that he can say a few words on behalf of this fundraiser, because I know it, it means a lot to him. So we'll just keep going here and hope that Chris can get into us, or we can get to him. Now, how thrilled are your players about this? Because as a player, I can't imagine, you know, such a great facility and how much fun it would be.
I think there's a lot of excitement. I felt really bad for our seven graduating players last year, because they didn't get to spend any time on it. We put it in summer and it just wasn't ready to go. So we played all of our games on the road last year, including our playoff game and including our provincial playoff game. So it was tough for them and it was tough for us. We were hoping to play at least our provincial playoff game on it, but everyone who works in the industry just said no, it wasn't going to be ready. We're going to do more damage to it. So we held off, and we're really excited. We actually have spring football starting here. We run a spring program from grades 4 to 11 here in Indian Head, and we have that starting probably about mid-April here. And we have, I believe it's 77 kids signed up from grades 4 to 11. It's just a really, really exciting time here. And I mean, football is big all across rural Saskatchewan, obviously, and there are a lot of great programs out there, great coaching, great players, and we just felt it was time to kind of do something a little bit bigger, because night games are a big event in this town.
Right, and Friday Night Lights.
Yes, sir.
Right out of the United States, and there's nothing wrong with Friday Night Lights in Canada, that's for sure. You know, it's interesting, and it's such a good thing that people like yourself, Tim, are coaching high school football, because, you know, I think back to like Bobby Orr's book when he did an autobiography about a decade ago. He said the most fun he had in hockey was playing on the lake with his buddies in Parry Sound, Ontario. And I think that can be applicable. I know it is with high school football. In many cases, as you know, Tim, it's one of the best times of a young man's life.
I think a lot of kids and past players that I've had have come to me, and you know, I like to say that they're remembering everything that I'm teaching them in school, and I like to say that that's all being carried forward, but the reality is kids remember the extracurricular activities that they do in school. Football is a big part. I've coached basketball as well. We have a great basketball programs here in Indian Head, but you know, football is near and dear to my heart, and when we started this program again in 2011, we had tremendous community support, and that support hasn't waned. That support has been there since we started this in 2011, and I mean, Bronx football had a massive history going back 1948 to 1998, and the program died because of money and lack of coaching. And when we started again in 2011, it was a lot of excitement. And our first game that we hosted, we were posting the score on a whiteboard with big numbers, because we didn't have a small clock yet, hadn't arrived yet. So we've come a long way.
Now, can we get, do you think, Chris Getzloff on the air here? Let's check. Chris, can you hear us at all?
I can.
Nice.
Good. Oh, outstanding. Well, we've got you together with Tim. Now, how do you feel about this situation, Chris? You know, as a former professional football player helping a high school in Indian Head, it must be gratifying to lay a helping hand here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always prided myself on being part of the community ever since I, you know, kind of got into professional sport, and, you know, specifically around the football world, which obviously is near and dear to my heart. You know, obviously I made a living at it for a while when I dipped my toe there in the CFL for a bit. So getting the opportunity to go out and help these smaller communities with any kinds of fundraisers like this, I definitely look forward to.
Now, Tim, you've got you know, a former star player for the Rough Riders coming to Indian Head. How much does that mean to the community?
I mean, it means everything. The riders have been really good in, I think, in helping us fundraise. When we built our clock, we had, they donated to our legacy fund, but just having, like, I mean, I can stand up there and talk, but people don't want to hear me talk. They want to hear someone like Chris come in and talk and talk about his football world and his world and what football has meant to him. And, we're ecstatic to have him.
Hey, Chris, for folks who don't know, it all started for you back in high school at Robert Usher, sadly, a program that's no longer around. But how big a deal was high school football for you in terms of launching you to that next level?
I mean, it was huge. Like, I started playing football when I was 13 and kind of, you know, developed a love for it going through the RMF program. And then, obviously, you know, graduating to high school football, where I played grade 11 and grade 12, and it was really during that time that football kind of took over for me as my favorite sport. You know, I was kind of torn between hockey and football to that point, and going into my grade 12 year, I kind of made a decision that I want to focus on football, and ended up leaving the AAA hockey camp that I was in at that time. So, you know, football helped shape the love of the game to the point where, you know, I didn't want to stop playing. I wanted to continue and hopefully have opportunities that were beyond that. And, you know, that allowed me to propel me to, you know, get on with the Prairie Thunder at the time, obviously the Thunder now, and play junior football and then extend on to university and so on and so forth. So high school definitely shaped my kind of career path when it came to making a decision that football is what I wanted to focus on.
Hey, Tim, tell us about your team for a little bit. I'm not familiar with the league out there. Do you guys play nine-man, or how does that work?
Yeah, we are a nine-a-side. Our team, actually, we have been blessed. We have our community, but we also pull from Wolseley, Molmar, Carry the Kettle, and Bybank communities, and kids can come play with us. We have co-ops with all of those teams, or pardon me, all those schools. We had 47 on our roster last year.
Nice.
One of the things I'm really proud of is we had 5 female players playing for us, and they all contributed. And we've been quite successful. We were first in our league last year. We started in 2011. We won provincials in 2013 and 19, and we won silver in 17, 18, and 22. And then the old Bronx, I got to give them a shout out. They won provincial championships in 62, 63, and 66. So there's a long legacy of success here in Indian Head. And I think just building this field and giving, you know, our kids something they can be proud of and somewhere we can showcase these kids and their talents and their abilities is excellent. It's outstanding. We're really excited about it.
What's so exciting, Tim, is a few years ago, people would say, well, a young gal just can't play football. And now it's starting to happen. I'm thinking about tomorrow night. I can't wait to watch Caitlin Clark at Iowa play UConn. I'm just jacked up about that game like I can't believe. And it's so wonderful to see young women playing football. Tell me about your experiences with doing this.
Well, we had a girl who played for us a few years ago. Her name was Jillian Moses, and she's the first girl who started as a grade 9 and went all the way through, and she was our wow. only female player at that mm-hmm. time. And you know, a nice little sideline is she's the only player I've coached who has scored a touchdown, got a sack, an interception, and a fumble recovery. And so, you know, she was fantastic, and she actually comes back and she helps coach our junior program, our grade 5-6 program, our U11. So having you know, they're players. That we don't look at them any differently. We look at all of our players as being players. And that's how our team looks at it, and that's our philosophy. And they fit in. It's fantastic. It's great to see.
Well, you're going to have a great evening with Chris Getzlaff tonight in Indian Head. Now, I don't know if you heard the start of our show today, Chris, but I was talking briefly about how in 2007 you won a 2007 Rough Rider Grey Cup ring. That same year, your brother Ryan won a Stanley Cup ring with Anaheim. And I'm trying to figure out, because Jim Hobson did those 07 rings up really well for Saskatchewan, who's got a bigger ring, you or your brother?
Good question. I think I just have to hand that over to the Stanley Cup ring for that one. It's a, you know, a little bigger, but I mean, anytime you have a championship ring from that magnitude, regardless of the sport, they're pretty gaudy to start with. So they're big rings.
Well, Chris and Tim, have a great evening in Indian Head tonight. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Where Saskatchewan sports fans come to talk. This is the Sports Cage on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Don Hewitt back with Pete Pascoe. You know, another good thing about the Indian Head Bakery, Pete, is the Indian Head Bakery.
Never been.
James Hamilton texting in and says they have the best coconut long johns you'll ever eat in the Indian Head Bakery.
Coconut long johns. Might be worth a try.
I'm familiar with the concept
of the long john, but coconut.
I would suggest it is worth a try. Joining us up next is Jack Newman. Jack, of course, is known as only Jack from Calgary, mysteriously, on the round table, where he makes some great comments on Rough Rider games. He's from Saskatoon. He now lives in Calgary for the last couple of decades, and he joins us on the cage. And one of the main reasons I wanted Jack to join us on the cage was to talk about Ryan Sevier, who Jack knew very well back when Jack was with the Dinos and Ryan was with the Dinos. And of course, he is a born and bred Calgary guy, and he's now signed with Saskatchewan. So, Jack, welcome to Sports Cage. How the heck did the Saskatchewan Rough Riders sign Ryan Sevier from the Stampeders?
Before I get into that, Don, I'd like to first pass on condolences to the family of Jim Hobson. I had the pleasure of meeting Jim a few times when I was involved. Well, actually, I'm involved with the University of Calgary. And I've met Jim three or four times. He was a great human being. He did a fabulous job for the Rough Rider program. And he's going to be missed not only in Saskatchewan, but by the entire CFL. And that's a huge, huge loss.
Well, it certainly is, Jack. And everybody is feeling the loss of Jim Hobson. I mean, you saw Craig Reynolds yesterday, and he had tears in his eyes talking about Jim. There's been many people I know with tears in their eyes talking about Jim. And yeah, it was a tough day a few days ago, and it still is. But anyway, I'm sorry about that.
Getting back to your original question.
Yeah, getting back to Ryan Sevier, I just can't figure out how the Rough Riders signed him from Calgary. Can you tell us a little bit about Ryan to start with?
Yeah, I can tell you what I know about this. I was down in Arizona when I found out about this. I got a text from somebody. And I also saw it on TSN and stuff like that. And I figured, what the heck is going on here? What's this all about? What people have to realize is that the Rough Riders pulled a real good signing. I didn't think Ryan Sevier would ever leave Calgary. The thing about Ryan is this: he grew up within the shadows of McMahon Stadium. He played football at Bowness High School. That would be like playing at Tom Collegiate in Regina, from proximity standpoint to the to where Mosaic Stadium is right now. He basically could have ridden his bike if he was in shape, which he probably, which he is, to games to McMahon Stadium. He was not a suburb kid or anything like that. He played all his football at Bowness High School and high school. He played his community football right around McMahon Stadium. He played his university football at McMahon Stadium. When he was drafted by the Stampeders in the first round, all he did was walk across the field to the other side and change locker rooms. Saskatchewan got themselves a very good offensive guard. His best friend, football-wise, is Sean McEwen, the center for the Stampeders. They played their entire careers together with the University of Calgary. So I was shocked that Ryan would move to Saskatchewan, but obviously he's moving for football reasons and probably some financial reasons as well. But that says a lot for Corey Mace. It's an upgrade along your offensive line completely. He's a plug-and-play Canadian. He was an all-star last year. And I haven't talked to Ryan. I've only been back from Arizona for a couple of weeks, and I haven't made the rounds yet to talk to football people about that, but I'm about to. And it's a very interesting signing, but it's a very tremendous good signing for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. He's going to waltz in there and take over where Evan Johnson was, and that's an upgrade along the offensive line.
I mean, this sort of thing I haven't seen happen before. When
absolutely.
You've got an entrenched veteran playing yep. for the Stampeders saying, see you later, I'm heading to Saskatchewan. And like you said, Jack, and I agree, obviously when he talked to Corey Mace, he liked what he heard. And when he talked to Ryder General Manager Jeremy O'Day, he liked what he heard. And aren't the Stamps, so, or at the time, they must have been reeling, I would think.
I wasn't here when the signing came out, as I said earlier, Don, but there's no doubt about it. It's been the talk of town a little bit, you know, at Spalumbo's restaurant and stuff like that. And I've talked to one or two football people. There's a lot more I have to talk to before I can talk a lot more about this. But they said something happened along the way, and that's a huge get for the Rough Riders. Usually it's the other way. See, if you're going to Calgary, is akin to a guy like Clark. Moving Clark going to Saskatchewan, from Saskatchewan to Edmonton or Calgary or to Winnipeg.
You're talking about Dan Clark, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. He was born and raised here. His parents played, he's from an athletic family. His father played in the Western Hockey League. His mother and played for the University of Calgary hockey team. And his mother was a starter on our women's volleyball team for 5 years. So he's an athlete.
Calgary born and bred. Now, fellas, I have to point out there was one example not too long ago of an entrenched Calgary O-lineman coming to Saskatchewan, that being Derek Dennis. And that turned out poorly because they moved him to guard and he was like a fish out of water there.
Absolutely. That was a bad move. But the thing about Derek Dennis was different. Derek Dennis was an import.
Yep.
Ryan Sevier was born and raised in Calgary.
You know, and
as a Canadian,
sorry, Jack.
And, you very rarely see you see it going the other way. You see a kid going from that wants to go home for whatever reason. Usually, it's the other way. I can't think of a big example like this where a Canadian has gone from an established starting position to another team in the division, your closest geographical rival, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
It was Winnipeg, but still a rival, a big time rival,
a big time rival. Like, I mean, I saw it in Arizona, and it's actually interesting. The day it happened, I ran into someone at the grocery store. I don't know who the individual was, but he had a Rough Rider hat on, and I says, "Go Riders!" And he says, "Yeah, go Riders." He said, "We just got a great old lineman from Calgary." I said, "Yeah, Sevier." He said, "Yeah." So,
wow,
even was talking
about
it down there.
Now, speaking of the Phoenix area, Jack, you know, you see so many Saskatchewan hats at Cactus League games, of course, preseason Major League Baseball games down in the Phoenix area. You see so many Saskatchewan plates in parking lots. down at Cactus League games. I mean, you go to Cactus League games. You just said you winter down in Phoenix. So I guess my question is, how many major league teams train and play games down in Greater Phoenix in February,
Greater
March?
Phoenix area, Don. The Greater Phoenix area has 15 teams, 10 ballparks.
Okay.
In those 10 ballparks, they're split 5 and 5 between the East Valley and the West Valley. In the East Valley, there's the there's 6 teams. The Cubs, who are in Mesa, the Oakland A's, soon to become the San Francisco, Sacramento, whatever they are, A's, are in Mesa. The Giants are in Old Town Scottsdale. And the Diamondbacks and the Rockies are in North Scottsdale, and the Angels are in Tempe, right near the airport and the University of and Arizona State University. When you fly in, the planes go over the ballpark in Tempe. So those are your five. Those are your teams that are in the East Valley. In the West Valley, there's 9 teams. There's the Ohio teams, Cleveland and Cincinnati and Goodyear. There are the Dodgers and the White Sox in Glendale, which is out near where the Coyotes used to play hockey. There's the Milwaukee Brewers in Maryville, which is close to Glendale. There's the Mariners and the Padres in Peoria. And the Rangers and the Royals are in Surprise. So those are the 9 teams. So basically, and you can catch a doubleheader. And I've done it. I just did it this year. But you can't go from the East Valley to the West Valley just because of time and the traffic and stuff like that. But it's been done. And what's really interesting is the umpires. There's umpires in the Grapefruit League, which is in Florida, and there's umpires in the Cactus League. Well, the umpires, I was talking to one of them, Rob Drake. He says there's certain umpires that just do East Valley games, and there's certain umpires that just do West Valley.
Are they actually MLB umpires?
Absolutely, they're MLB umpires, and some of them are AAA umpires that are going to be on relief or injury relief or bereavement relief or whatever it is. Okay, and actually, one of the umpires that was doing a game when I saw him was none other than Stu Sherwater from Regina.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep. Major league umpire.
And the Blue Jays don't like him, apparently. And he's a Canadian umpire.
Oh, well.
That's their problem. But spring training is an industry down there. It goes for 3 weeks and a couple of days, and you see their fans. You see fans dressed in their hats and jackets and stuff like that, and T-shirts. And then you see people, as you alluded to earlier, with Saskatchewan license plates and Saskatchewan Rough Rider paraphernalia on them.
That's so cool. I mean, it's a great thing to do for snowbirds, but like I said, you don't have to be retired. Now, of all those teams you mentioned, which team down there has the largest following, Jack?
Oh, I guess there's 3 that do, and it's a bone of contention with me. Spring training, when I started going down there 12 years ago, it wasn't all that expensive. But now it's become a little too expensive for a lot of people. But if people are stupid enough to pay $50 for a lawn seat to see some guys play 3 innings, they can go ahead and do it. I'm not doing it. I guess the 3 teams that are the most expensive to watch and the following are the Cubs, which are like a cult, the Giants, because they are the Giants have been training in Phoenix for longer than you and I have been on the planet, okay? And the Dodgers.
Well,
the Dodgers are real close. The people come over, and the Ohtani thing is, there's Ohtani mania going on.
Oh, I bet.
Wherever Ohtani plays, the prices go up, and that's it. I can tell you a little funny story what happened to a friend of mine on the Ohtani thing. Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine visiting me from British Columbia, and that person said, I'd like to see Ohtani play. So I says, okay, we're not going to go see him play against the Dodgers because, A, we can't afford, and B, it's probably sold out. But we'll see if he's playing out in Goodyear against one of the Ohio teams. And so we didn't pre-buy our tickets, and we just waited and waited until the lineups got in on MLB.com starting lineups, and Ohtani didn't play. All of a sudden, when Ohtani didn't play, there were a lot of tickets available.
By the way, folks, Jack Newman joins us on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home, Jack. Call Western Pizza today. Now for my story about the Cactus League. Mm-hmm. One time I saw the longest lineup in the history of sports. It went on for blocks. And I thought, well, I can't stay in this lineup. I'll die of sunstroke down in Phoenix. So I'm just going to walk up and see who it was. And you can relate to this, Jack. The person that everybody was waiting for to get their autograph was none other than Harry Carey. The long-time
radio voice. Yeah, he was an icon. There's no doubt about it. And you know what's interesting about Cactus League is that you run into a lot of former baseball players that have retired there.
Yes, and you know your buddy Bill Melton is your neighbor. He played, for the Chicago White Sox? I think he hit 160 home runs between 68 and 77, 591 RBIs, and was on White Sox radio and TV. And he's your buddy, Jack. He's your buddy right beside you.
I'm fortunate enough he lives across the street from me and up a couple of buildings, and you had the opportunity to meet Bill, and he's just a great guy to talk about old school baseball and stuff like that. And he's a great guy. And there's lots of former MLB players that live in the greater Phoenix area because of the weather, and you can also golf all the time.
Well, speaking
of
golf,
players like to play golf.
Bill Melton was very upset when I met him with Jock in Phoenix this winter because Pete Pasco.
Yes.
Bill Melton went to a driving range in Phoenix, and for $10 in his basket, he got 10 balls.
Oh.
Pete Pasco, he paid $1 US.
That's not a
per
good
ball.
Deal.
What's going on with that, Jack? That's a lot
golf.
Of money, and he's got
golf,
some money.
And if people are foolish enough to pay it, so be it. Just like it costs so much money, Don, to go watch some of the Dodgers and the Cubs games. And see, what they didn't used to have selective pricing either a few years ago. Now they've got it for certain games down in spring training, which is kind of different. And, you know, because of COVID, and I think COVID is a convenient excuse for this, you used to be able to, and I used to love to do this, is go to the back fields, because I love baseball, and I'd like to go to the back fields to see them work on the pickoff plays, to see them work on the relays if they're taking the right angle, and you know what I mean, and how to block the plate. But now, since COVID came, you just don't have the access anymore to go watch the finer points of the game, and that's really disappointing for a person like myself who likes to watch the repetitions. I know some people aren't into it, but I'm into it.
In terms of spring training and watching the teams, I mean, I guess it's probably tough to get a real feel in terms of, okay, the Jays are going to be good this year because I've seen them play 2-3 times down here, but then again, it's a bunch of guys who may be ending up playing Double A or Triple A. Can you get a good feel in terms of which teams are going to be strong just based on the limited amount you get to see them down there?
Yeah, you can. Towards the end, when the players are getting stretched out, you can see you're able to see it. You can see who makes the routine plays and who makes and who doesn't. And yeah, you can get a good feel for it. Like, the pitching is hard to gauge because you don't know if a pitcher is working on a certain pitch or not, with, you know, because they're experimenting with a new forkball or a new slider or something like that. The average fan like you and I don't know that, but management knows that. Okay? And that's one of the things. But you can see who's a player and who isn't a player. Like, I'll tell you a little story that happened to me this year. I saw six games, and I came away just, everyone talks how good Francisco Lindor is and what a great shortstop he is. He's a great player, and he's now with the Mets. He used to be with Cleveland. But a guy that doesn't take a back seat to anybody, and I saw him play, he made two fabulous plays in a five-inning span, and that's Bobby Witt Jr. for Kansas City.
Mm.
Oh, my. This guy is a five-tool player, and he is just young. And why I can understand why they signed him to that big contract, because he is a friend. He is what you call a franchise player.
Well, that's why it's worth going to the Cactus League right there. I mean, I have stories, too, when I was younger, going down there, and you're like 10 feet away from a Hall of Famer at times. You may only see him for a couple of innings, but you're still 10 feet away from him, maybe not as much 10 feet nowadays. But anyway, I just thought I'd chat to you about the Cactus League, because it's so many people go down there from Saskatchewan. And, you know, I was in an area of Mesa not too long ago, and I couldn't believe how many people renting or owning homes down there had rider flags or rider signs on their front lawns down there.
Yep, they've got their, you know, something else, and there's a lot of people, and I've noticed this by going to the Mariner games, there are a lot of people from BC that follow the Mariners because of the proximity.
Yep, yeah, and the Blue Jays, too, because they pile down to the Seattle games. Thanks a lot for joining us, Jack. We really appreciate your insights. So Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage, on 620 CKRM.
Don Hewitt, along with Pete Pasco, and thanks to our operator, Alan Lee, who just gave me some headsets that actually worked.
Ooh, fancy.
Thanks to Alan. And don't forget, you can call or text us on the text line, 306-936-6262. You can text us or call us or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. The text line brought to you by Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer, CapitalFordLincoln.com. Now let's go to Benny Wolchuk with the SJHL report.
It's time for the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League reports on the Sports Cage. I'm Benny Wolchuk. The top seeds held fort on night one of round two of the SJHL postseason. Up at the legendary Whitney Forum in Flin Flon, Battleford netminder Logan Cunningham made 55 saves, but it wasn't quite enough. The top-seeded Flin Flon Bombers escaped with a 4-3 victory in game number one. Justin Lee's second goal of the game on the power play just 5:18 into the third period was the difference. Ben Portner scored twice to lead the North Stars, who lost for the first time this postseason. The two teams will meet tonight for game number two in Flin Flon, starting at 6:30 p.m. Saskatchewan time. Just a little more south in Melfort, Kenora product Clay Sleva scored the game-winning goal with 5:45 left in regulation. Helped the Melfort Mustangs to a 4-2 game one victory over the humble Broncos at the Northern Lights Palace. Jacob Strizzi tied the game for the Broncos early in the third before Sleva's winner and Logan Belton's empty netter to seal it. SJHL Goalie of the Year finalist James Venn was a difference, making 33 saves on 35 shots in the Mustangs' goal. The Palace will be the site of game number two tonight, starting at 7:30 p.m. For the series shifts back to the Elgar Peterson Arena in Humboldt for games 3 and 4 on Tuesday and Wednesday. Both series will also take the weekend off in respect for the memory of the April 6, 2018 Humboldt Broncos bus crash. Some other notes, graduating LaRange Ice Wolves defenseman Parker Layden has recently signed a pro contract with the Columbus River Dragons of the Federal Prospects Hockey League. In three games with the River Dragons, he has 2 points. The LaRange Saskatchewan product is coming off a great season with the Ice Wolves scoring 18 times and netting 31 assists for 49 points in 54 games. Meanwhile, Malvern Millionaires captain Peyton Gustician will be advancing his hockey career at the collegiate level. The Malville product is committed to the ACAC State Trojans in Calgary, Alberta, starting this fall. For today's SJHL report on the Sports Cage, I'm Betty Walchuk.
And we're back with the Cage, Don Hewitt, with my buddy Pete Pasco. And we're joined on the Cage by TSN Farhan Lodgy, who now joins us to chat about a variety of topics. Farhan, Touchdown Pacific goes August 31st in Victoria. The BC Lions taking on the Ottawa Red Blacks. The Victoria-based game sold out in half an hour, 14,000 seats at Royal Athletic Park, and the organizers now adding extra seats. This event seems to be on fire, Farhan.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask me for a game preview to see who was going to win.
Yeah, well, it's a brilliant. It's brilliant for the Lions because the Ottawa Redblacks aren't a large draw, and they're going to pack the joint in Victoria.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great, right? And you know, this is the BC Lions. It's not the Vancouver Lions, and they are trying to definitely make a big imprint on the entire province and reconnect that way. And when you look at Amar Doman and what some of the things he's done previously since taking over, right? I mean, they've had deals with BC Ferries, and they're trying to get afternoon games, you know, at 4 o'clock so that people can get there and back on the same day, right? So it certainly is a positive that they've been doing here, and I think this is kind of the next step in that evolution. So I think it's going to be a big, big win.
Now, it seems like the CFL has given up on the Maritimes at this point. I don't hear any news about it. And you think about, okay, where can they get to that 10th team that is so pivotal, I believe, for a balanced schedule, all the different reasons that come up with a 5-5 on either side. So, I mean, there's 400,000 people, if not more, living in Greater Victoria. I mean, you go to Victoria nowadays, you're driving forever out in the suburbs and everything else. It costs $100. I mean, it's great that they're trying to help people come from Victoria, but it costs $100 each way to take the ferry from Vancouver to Victoria and back. And you're in a lineup, as you well know, for probably an hour or more before you set sail in your vehicle. So, you know, it takes a lot of effort, I guess, is what I'm saying, from Victoria to a BC Lions home game. So, I mean, is it possible? Is there any chance that Victoria, given a larger stadium, could support a CFL team?
Well, like, the last thing you said is the most important, right? So now I don't know that they necessarily could. I mean, you know, could Saskatoon, could Quebec City? You know, there are some of these markets that are kind of at that size that you've got to ask yourself, right? That is it something that can work for an event, or can it be a sustainable franchise, right? And that's the difference. And I think that becomes really, really difficult. So, you know, I'm not sure that it can. I'm not gonna rule it out, because it is definitely a growing area, right? I mean, it is an important part of British Columbia, and it's getting bigger. There's no doubt. But, you know, the stadium's a big thing, right? I mean, when you look at Halifax and the Maritimes, I absolutely believe they can support it. There is ownership available and in place and ready to do it, but the government just has no interest in the stadium. So, yeah, it does seem like the CFL has moved on as far as Halifax is concerned, and they're looking for that opportunity for the 10th team. And I think you have to look at Victoria. You've got to look at the island, because it is one of those next tier in terms of size, in terms of, you know, what that center looks like. So I would imagine that they'll float it out there, and, you know, then you got to decide, like, if you're Amar Doman, do you want to support this? Just like if you're Pierre Carl Pelletier in Montreal, do you want to support Quebec City? Or do you view that as part of your backyard, right? So, you know, and truthfully, I think both of those owners would probably see it from a big picture standpoint and try to support it if there was ownership and people that wanted to do it. But really, in every case, it comes down to a stadium. The stadium in Quebec City is not big enough. There isn't anything in Victoria that is big enough, but there might be some land options there that they could convert something to that, right? I mean, when I think of the Commonwealth Games that were here, they were ready to give the city of Victoria that stadium. Right, like, they were ready to just hand it over to them if the city was just willing to maintain it, and the city said no because they had no use for anything that big. So they just basically said to the Commonwealth Games Committee, tear it down, because it was temporary seating, and thanks but no thanks. So, but you wonder what that would have looked like had they kept it, right?
And there's so much money in Victoria. You drive around and you go, is there anybody that doesn't have money in this city? I mean, the disposable income in Victoria is almost limitless from what I've seen. So, you know, you talk about, you know, say Quebec City and the NHL playing the Canadiens when Nordique had the big rivalry with the Habs, and then you got Molson, the owner of the Canadiens, saying, you know, we wouldn't step in the way of a team in Quebec City because we'd have such a great rivalry. Is Jeff Molson telling the truth? Probably not, but that's what he's saying anyway. And I was thinking, what a fabulous rivalry you could create with a team in Victoria against the Lions in Vancouver. But, you know, like you said, it's all about a stadium. And, you know, I won't go on and on about Amar Doman, but, like, to me, last season, he was the MVP of the league, really, I thought. The most valuable person, as was Pierre Paladeau in Montreal in many respects. So those two guys, I mean, if you had to ask me what's the best thing that happened to the CFL, it was them, particularly for some reason. Amar, and I'm, you know, just getting into the community in BC. I mean, you go to Calgary. Now, Calgary's in the prairies. It's got $1.4 million. And as far as I'm concerned, Farhan, I mean, when John Hufnagel was running it as the president, you didn't see any signs of the Stampeders in Calgary. You didn't see, when I see signs, I mean literally signs. You didn't hear or see about the Stampeders in Calgary. Like, it should be in the community. It should be much larger than it is, and Vancouver's much larger. It has a different population, and Doman is getting it in the community.
Yeah, you're not wrong, right? I mean, and ultimately, this is one of those things that becomes difficult for a community ownership group to do when you're at the wrong state of where the franchise is, right? Like, it takes money to make money. And when you look at Amar Doman, he has invested a lot of money. And as a result, they're all of a sudden starting to see more fans, and you're seeing more engagement. And there's a connection now, right? Like, it is different. So you've got to invest, and you're seeing Pierre-Carl Pelladeau do that. And I think in Edmonton, mm-hmm. that's going to be the next one, because we know they are going private. And you've got Park Lane, who's involved. They were involved in finding other ownership, including Pelladeau in Quebec. There's a lot of interested parties, as you know. Rick Lawlisher, who shepherded the Lions to its sale, is going to be responsible here to making sure that Edmonton gets to the right place. So yeah, I think the next thing is going to be Edmonton, right? Like, they are going to have that kind of success. It's just a matter of time. When I say that, you know, business-wise, and then eventually the team's got to live up to it. Like, you see what the Lions have done for the last 2 years, and you saw what the Owls did this year. So Edmonton's going to have to catch up football-wise, but I do think that once it's sold, you're going to have the right owner that's willing to invest and do things the right way. And you know what? Maybe Calgary's next, right? Because you clearly know that the Flames owners aren't necessarily investing a lot in making the Stampeders, that next team. So maybe that becomes a team that's up for sale sooner than later as well, right? So the right ownership is what this league needs right now. I mean, certainly in Saskatchewan and Winnipeg, the right owners are the fans, but everywhere else, they need something different. So hopefully both Edmonton and Calgary are the next to follow suit.
Well, you know, I think of the Green Bay Packers and the NFL as being so unique. They're the closest thing to a team like the Rough Riders because they're community owned, and it really works in Green Bay. And I was thinking, so unique, so cool in pro sports to have a team owned by the fans. Now it's going to end up being only Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. Is there a sadness about that in some respects, so far, Hon, or am I too sentimental?
Yeah, I think you're sentimental. Fortunately, the late, great Jim Hobson was able to do some fantastic things in Saskatchewan to keep that community owned, right? I mean, we don't have to go that far back for guys like you and I to the 80s when they were doing Save Our Riders campaigns, right? And I know he was kind of more involved as president a little bit after that, but certainly he had his feet on the ground back then as well. And you know, you had the right people doing the right things to keep it community owned. But I think from a league perspective, we just want to see committed ownership. And, I don't think anybody can look at the Lions situation or the Edmonton situation or the Montreal situation and would have thought community ownership was the right thing in those places, right? It just isn't for everybody. It's not for every market. And certainly Saskatchewan is fantastic, right? I always say that it's chicken soup for the CFL soul when you go there.
Yep.
But that's just not the case everywhere else, right? And Winnipeg, in my opinion, has really been buoyed by the rivalry with Saskatchewan. You know what I mean? Like, that rivalry and the Labor Day game and the return match and all of that has really helped those franchises, along with their on-field success. But just being connected to that rivalry has been really, really important. So the fact is that, you know, you could look at either one of those franchises at various stages in the last 30 to 40 years and thought, boy, they were almost tipped the other way, right? And fortunately, it didn't happen, and the fans have totally bought in. And, you know, you go to Winnipeg, and, you know, it feels like the Bombers are as big as the Jets, right? And,
no,
and
if not bigger, really.
I don't know that you can say that anywhere else, but
no.
that has both teams. But luckily, we do have the two. But I just think the right ownership matters more.
I want to backtrack just for a second. I did badmouth Calgary for a minute in not getting out in the community, and I've heard lots of that from Calgary. Like, they're not even at the Dino fundraisers, things like that. I've heard that for years, but I will say this. Jay McNeil coming in as the president of the Stampeders, Farhan, seems, he's also the alternate governor, he seems to be the right guy for the job because he really wants to get this changed around with the ownership group that the Stampeders have. Now, he wants to get it changed around, and he really wants to get into the community more than they have been.
Yeah, and I don't think the players or even John Huffnagel were opposed to doing that, but it's got to be a little targeted, and it's, you know, it's like when people say to me, marketing, you know, the CFL needs to do a better job of marketing. What the hell does that mean? That guy's yeah. our age, you know, just, you know, old man yelling at clouds, right? Because marketing today is different than it was before, right? Like, it's not just billboards and newspaper ads. That's kind of antiquated marketing. Things are a lot more subtle. They're a lot more targeted. There's a lot more involved in social media. You know, it looks different than it did before, so we complain because we don't see what we saw before, and we want to see what we saw before. Well, that's not necessarily what's going to work. And same thing in the community, right? So I think Jay is a pretty savvy businessman. He's got his finger on the pulse in Calgary in that business community, and I agree with you. I think he's the right guy to get it done.
Can I take it on a bit of a tangent, fellas?
Go ahead.
Okay, just for a sec. Farhan, you are close enough to this that I don't think this will be a curveball for you in any respect, but what's happening with the SFU program? Will there be football there ever again?
That's a good question. I have my doubts. I quite frankly do, and I say that because the university took its big punch from us, from the alumni, from the media across the country, from everybody that looked at this and thought, what a shameful situation. And they took the punch. We felt like we were close to a tipping point, but then, you know, they were able to wait for the advisor report. The advisor came back with a report that said, look, this problem right now at Simon Fraser is so much deeper than football. The entire athletic department is a shambles. So they had to fix, they didn't have to because they haven't done it yet. They're in the process of attempting to fix that. And the next thing is going to be to hire an athletic director. So my feeling is that given where the university is at financially or claims to be financially, you know, a new athletic director, I don't believe, is going to come in with a mandate to reestablish the football program. So I haven't given up hope, but I certainly have my doubts, and it would definitely be a shame. From an alumni standpoint, you know, the alumni wants to make sure that they're still doing their part to contribute to football, right, and to try to help develop it and raise money for scholarships and do other things like that. And, you know, for me, even though I'm an SFU alum, I'm more of a stakeholder in terms of BC high school football because I coached out here for 32 years. So I don't give a damn where the second university has a football program if it's SFU or not. Like, if SFU wants to be that short-sighted and you know, continue to behave the way they are, then let's find another university. Because the thought that the Maritimes have 4 university football programs and Ontario has 10 and Saskatchewan has 2 and British Columbia has 1 is ridiculous. Because our numbers for high school football have been really, really growing in the last 3 years coming out of the pandemic. And the thought that these people have like one place provincially to go is really unfortunate. SFU is a good school academically, but clearly they're void of leadership on a number of other levels. So, so they're certainly not going to be football this year. Can they get to a point where a new athletic director comes in and enough alumni rally it where they can carry the entire thing financially without meaningful investment from the university and they can potentially try to bring it back in 2026? Sure, that's possible. But like I said, I just, based on the way leadership is up there, I really have my doubts. And you know me, like I was pretty passionate around the whole issue and wanted to see it happen and was fighting for it. But I want to put my attention now to find a second university that can have football and give these kids here a place to play, right? And not just rely on UBC and you know, places, other provinces. I just don't think it should be like that, given the sport, the importance of the sport in the province to have only one university playing.
Well, we started out on the island. May as well go back there for a second. Is UVic a possibility in terms of a U Sports program, or do they not have the grassroots to get that up and running?
Well, there's more football on the island. I don't know it's necessarily about grassroots, but the university has to want it. And I think there was a time you know, maybe a decade ago that they really weren't interested, and I do think it's worth revisiting, but there's also tremendous growth in the Okanagan. We've got multiple universities up there. You've also got Trinity Western University down here, which might have the more, you know, financial wherewithal, and it might fit their mandate a little bit better in the Fraser Valley. It's a more expensive school, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. But there are options here, and I just think we need to sit down with the right people. And, you know, I've talked to Amar Doman about this, who was very, very supportive of trying to get the SFU program back. And Amar has said that, look, if you guys find the next place, I'll turn my support there. You will not lose that support. So, you know, kudos to him, because I know we talked about him earlier. But, you know, I do think it's going to take some time, but from these ashes will rise another phoenix at some point here.
Farhan Logie, you know, I wish we could have you on for like 3 hours. I wish you were on the entire show, but that's not, I guess we can't.
Several listeners are thinking the same thing. Weird.
No, you're just fabulous. We just love listening to your insights.
And we haven't even talked hockey yet.
No,
and we won't. But I just talked to a very frustrated Canucks fan, how they've been playing of late, just at lunch today, as a matter of fact. Oh, well, hopefully they get turned around. Well, thanks for joining us, Farhan. Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Sports Cage. Now back to the action on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
And Don Yeard here with you on the cage, along with my sidekick, man about town, Pete Pasco. Coming up at the top of the clock, we've got Bob Strum, the former general manager of the Regina Pats. Of course, Bob recently inducted into the Regina Sports Hall of Fame. And I can tell you, when you're talking hockey with Bob Strum, we're going to talk about who's hot and who's not going into the NHL playoffs. He's probably the most entertaining guy I've ever heard talking about hockey. He really is. And that includes anybody on Sportsnet or TSN.
Well,
Bob Strum is at the top of his game talking hockey, and probably the most entertaining on top of it. At 5:30, we've got Dave Campbell, the Elks color man. Of course, Pete and I will be talking to him about a similar topic we just talked to Farhan about, and that's about the current sale that is going on with the Elks from public to private ownership. And from what I understand, they've still got money in the bank in Edmonton with the public team. I guess it's going to get transferred to the owner. I'm not sure. Anyway, let's go to Travis Stewart now for Chase the Ice.
Thanks, Don. Yes, I'm sitting here in the boardroom with Cindy from the Rough Rider Foundation. Welcome back, Cindy.
Thank you. Nice Easter weekend last weekend.
It was. So you guys did a draw on your Facebook page.
We did last Friday. And we did it all by ourselves, and we didn't mess it up.
Didn't mess it up. That jackpot is still climbing, right?
Oh, yeah. It's over 51,000 today.
51,000. Well, we're about to give away $1,588. Do you want to do that lucky spin there,
you
Cindy?
Betcha, I will.
And see who our lucky weekly winner is of $1,588.
It is Diane Sharp from Qu'Appelle. That's new. We have not had a winner in Qu'Appelle yet.
Nice. Good to have somebody new. Yeah. Diane Sharp from Qu'Appelle. We're going to try to get her on the line, and we'll see if she wins over $55,000 today while we try to get her on the line. Let's talk about the foundation. So,
sure.
As always, you're always so busy at the foundation. So what's going on? What's the latest?
We don't even call it busy because it's good, fun stuff
that we
do in the community, right? If
good
you love
attitude.
What you're doing, it's not a bad thing.
That's it.
Yeah. So upcoming, actually, is our Pigskins and Punchlines Comedy Night.
Very nice.
April 20th, and you can get tickets online. The tickets are only $70 a ticket, or you can bring all your friends. You get a little cheaper rate if you buy a table, but you get to meet some of our upcoming riders that before they head into training camp and play a few little fun games, as well as hear fantastic two comedians. And one is a Saskatchewan comedian, Jody Peters.
Oh, very nice.
So yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. And the funds raised go to our mental health program, because of course, laughter is the best medicine for mental health. So we're going to be laughing like crazy.
That could turn your day around right there.
If you
need a little pick-me-up, you support the foundation, get a good night out with friends or family,
right,
and you get some laughs. It's
of
a win-win.
It is, yeah.
So we talk about the foundation a lot. Of course, Chase Yeh's here is raising money for the foundation. Your comedy night's raising money for foundation.
Yep.
But people may not know exactly, you know, they know of the foundation, but they maybe don't know exactly where that money is helping out. So could you fill us in on a little bit?
Sure. So there's a lot of things that we help. So we actually give funding to a lot of groups. And this year, we gave a lot of money just recently to all of our amateur football groups, including Football SAS. So about $1.2 million this year went to amateur football in this province. We really believe in building the game of football. Obviously, we're a football club. And then we also have our reading program. And we also partner with Jim Pattison Children's Hospital. And this game of Chase Yeh's, we support Ronald McDonald House.
That's fantastic.
We're really excited about that. We've had our ace, which is Jorgen Hoos. He's actually gone to Ronald McDonald House and cooked a brisket for them for Christmas dinner. And we do some visits there. And it just puts a light on kids and families' faces when we can come and give them a little break in their tough day.
Well, that's nice. So when people are buying these tickets, they know they're supporting fantastic cause and possibly winning some money along the way.
Yeah, you can't get better than that, right? You can win some money and support a good cause. Nothing better than that.
Absolutely. So, and then in the off season, you have your players with help from the foundation money, helping out, going out to communities, helping out those that are in need, talking a lot about mental health. I know that's a huge part of the foundation.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know if anybody read Rob Servation's story last week about his experience going into a school with Mitch Picton.
No.
So Rob Vanstone went into a school with Mitch Picton, and he said he learned more there on on his own mental health.
Yeah, I bet.
So he wrote a great, really great story. So, you know, people can check it out and see what they think. But yeah, it's really good.
We don't have them on the line?
Three calls and then...
Okay. So we can't get a hold of him. We can't get a hold of him in three calls. Guess who gets to pick the number? You. You do,
the
Travis.
The pressure's on me now.
Yes, you
who
do.
Who was our lucky winner again? What was her name?
What was her name?
I should remember at the top of our head.
Curtis stole it on me.
I got the pressure.
Diane Sharp-Welder from Coppell.
Okay, Diane, I'm going to try to not let you down here. $1,588 if you're listening, Diane. We couldn't get you on the phone, but at least you won $1,500, and let's try to pick. Oh, now I got the pressure of picking a number for Diane. I'm going to go with 18 for Diane. 18, it looks like there's a big gap there in 18, so... Let's see if Diane wins over $55,000.
Well, if she does, she owes you a lot, Travis, because you chose
this. She can take me out for lunch if she wins.
You're her proxy today.
There we go. Ripping it open, 18 for Diane is... Oh, Diane, I let you down. I'm sorry.
It's a spade.
There we go.
It's a five of spades.
Five of spades. So that number keeps on climbing. That money keeps on growing. Cindy, if somebody wants to get involved and they want to buy for next week, how do they do so?
They just have to go on Ryderville.com under foundation, and it's like Chase the Ace, and you can buy right around 5 o'clock. They start to go on sale for next week. You could also buy a subscription so you don't have to remember each week. But, you know, when you're able to win over $50,000, that's a bit of a nice big pot you can get.
No kidding. So
yourself something nice.
Well, next Wednesday, we're announcing the new voice of the Riders. So we might have to sucker that new guy in to come do this with you as well.
That would be fantastic. Why not?
Absolutely. So make sure you go to the Ryderville website, buy your tickets, and we'll see you again in a week, Cindy.
You bet. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
This has been another edition of Chase Yeh's Rider Edition.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The Kings of Saskatchewan Sports Talk. This is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt back with Pete Pascoe. I got a text from Kevin Gallant on our text line today, and here's what Kevin had to say. Can you imagine a 12-team CFL league? Vancouver Island, BC Lions, Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg. Quebec City, Halifax, Maritimes, Toronto, Montreal, Hamilton, and Ottawa. Great Cups in Halifax, Victoria, and Quebec City. How exciting would that be? All markets are amazing, and the CFL would enjoy its greatest growth ever. CFL needs to grow, too. It's a bit stagnant, and there are more players than ever. Plus, it would finally be coast-to-coast. This would invigorate our country and sparked even more interest. This should be the long-term vision of the leadership of the CFL, more exposure. And that's absolutely right, Kevin. As Farhan said, though, stadiums is the big issue. Now, don't forget the Super Draft, the Kenniston Hockey Pool. It's the best in the business. I know Barney was picking players from the Nashville Predators. He's got Forsberg, Yossi, and O'Reilly. Barney was picking. Anyway, the Kenniston Super Draft Hockey Pool is the best in the business, and it's fun to be in a pool. Even if you don't have buddies to be in a pool with, you can be battling others, you know, by going into the Super Draft. You can pay $40, you can pay $10, you can pay $100, you can have a 32-man draft for $200. It's a lot of fun. For more information on the Super Draft, you can call 306-252-2100, email superdraft@sastel.net, or www.superdraft.com, and have fun for the hockey playoffs. I'm not going to have fun. The Montreal Canadiens aren't in it, but let's go over to Pete Pasco.
Yeah, that's a darn shame about the Montreal Canadiens, said the Toronto Maple Leafs fan, whose team probably isn't going to be around more than four or five games in the playoffs anyway. But time now to head to, I was going to say PA, but actually they're in Saskatoon tonight for Game 5 of that first-round WHL Eastern Conference Series between the PA Raiders and the Saskatoon Blades. Blades leading 3-1. They're looking to wrap things up on home ice tonight. And, of course, the Raiders looking to extend the series and take it back home. Time to head out on the Western Pizza Hotline, where the voice of the PA Raiders, Nolan Cole, joins us. Nolan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Pete. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys doing?
Oh, every day is a beautiful day in Regina. You know that. You've been around long enough. Tell us, what's the mood like? What's the atmosphere like heading into Game 5?
Well, it's been a good series. It's been a competitive series. Obviously, you know, the Blades are in the driver's seat right now. Winners of three straight. Obviously, the Raiders came in to this rink here, SaskTel Center, that I'm standing in right now here in the press box. They won Game 1 to, I think, maybe surprise some people. Max Hildebrand, the Raiders goaltender, was excellent, 41 saves in Game 1. And then, you know, Game 2 was close most of the night. Blades got it done in Game 2. Game 3 was a very competitive game, very close toss-up. Could have gone either way. Blades won in overtime, and then that seemed like it was maybe a bit of the turning point in the series, because I think Saskatoon played their best game of the series the other night in Game 4. So the mood coming in, I guess, is the Blades are feeling pretty good about themselves. A chance to wrap it up here on home ice. That's sometimes tough for teams, right? Maybe a bit more pressure to wrap it up on home ice. We've seen teams struggle with that over the years, I think, at different levels of hockey. But Saskatoon definitely in the driver's seat, but this Raiders team has been resilient all year, and they've already won one game in this rink, and they're going to try to do it again tonight to try to extend their season into at least tomorrow.
I was going to ask you about Game 3 and how the Raiders are feeling to get so close, to take it to overtime, and unfortunately not able to seal the deal, as it were. Was that a bit of a punch to the gut?
Yeah, for sure. That was a tough loss emotionally. You know, they trailed 2-0 in that game. You know, it was a near sellout crowd at the Arthauser Center. They came back to tie the game in the third, and you know, it was a penalty filled game, and I know the Raiders, you know, were upset with some of the calls that were made in that game, and you know, the goal in overtime 23 seconds in from Easton Armstrong was scored on a power play. There was a call late, but with a power play carrying into overtime. So yeah, that was a tough one. They definitely played well enough to win that game, and to lose in overtime was tough, and it just didn't seem like they could get back to that compete level, that emotional level, the next night in Game 4, and so they find themselves in a bit of a hole here tonight.
I was going to ask about the keys to victory for the Raiders tonight. Can I assume it all starts with Hildebrand between the pipes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's got to give them a chance. You know, I'm sure he's going to be peppered with shots again tonight. I know he's, you know, Game 1 he faced, you know, over 40, and you know, he's faced a lot of pucks. You know, the Blades have outshot the Raiders all season, really, regular season, and obviously here into the playoffs as well. So Hildebrand for sure would be one of the keys. I think he'll give them a chance to win here again tonight. Ryder Ritchie to me has been the best Raiders skater, NHL prospect, as you guys know. He's been excellent. Sloan Stanek, I think, has had a bit more of a quiet series. Hasn't been as noticeable as he was in the regular season. You never know with guys at this time of year, whether it's an injury or something else. But I think he's been a little quiet, has not scored yet. If he can score tonight, I think that would go a long way. And I think just, you know, their overall team game, their backs are against the wall, so I expect them to come out with a desperate style of hockey here tonight and you know, try to, you know, make it extremely difficult on Saskatoon and trying to close out this series.
Who's been doing most of the heavy lifting for the Blades in the series?
Yeah, for me, it's Igor Sidorov. I mean, this is one of the best kids I've seen live all year. Obviously, he's an NHL prospect as well. He can really shoot the puck. At times, he just dominates in the offensive zone. You know, he's strong on the puck. So he would be the standout to me. They've been kind of doing it by committee. I mean, Easton Armstrong as well. Yeah, he had a hat trick the other night, including the game winner in game three. He scored again, I believe, in game four. So he's been a difference maker. They got guys that skate well with the puck on the back end. Tanner Mullendyke has played a lot of minutes. So, and then, you know, in the Blades net as well, I mean, Evan Gardner, Austin Elliott struggled in game one, and they went to Gardner, the rookie, and he hasn't lost yet. He's won three in a row. I think he gave up some goals in Prince Albert that he'd probably want back, but he was very good in game two. And I haven't actually looked at the lineup just yet. I'm just going to get to that in a second, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't Gardner again here tonight because, like I say, he's undefeated in the playoffs as a rookie. So those would be a few guys that I've noticed for Saskatoon.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This is your first year in the WHL, correct?
Correct, yeah.
How long did it take you upon, moving from Estevan to Prince Albert to realize, oh, these people really don't like the Blades very much?
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, I was a part of some pretty good rivalries down in Estevan as well. But, yeah, no, this rivalry is unique, I think, in the sense that the two cities are pretty close together, only about an hour, 20 minutes. And, you know, there's been some playoff meetings in the past and, you know, the different style rinks and obviously, you know, Saskatoon's a much different city than Prince Albert just in terms of how it's made up, right? So I think, at least in my opinion, the time I've spent up here. So I think the both fan bases are passionate. You know, it's been fun to be a part of a series like this for sure.
I've got to give the Raiders social media team a bit of a thumbs up, I guess. They gave it to the Blades pretty good. I think it was yesterday, and I'm sure the Blades started it, of course. But basically, the gist of the post that I saw was, well, at least we've won a WHL or a league championship in the past 50 years. How about you?
Right. Yeah,
is that part of the fun?
I saw that. Yeah, for sure. I saw that yesterday, I guess. And it is. Yeah, no, for sure. You see that with sports teams all the time now on social media. And you know, I'm not involved with that. I work for the radio station in Prince Albert. But, yeah, I know, the Blades are having some fun with winning in Prince Albert at the Art Hauser Center. And the Raiders kind of responded with a pretty zinger of a reply there with Saskatoon not having won. So, yeah, that's I had a chuckle at that. It's all in good fun. And, boy, I tell you what, the Blades, do go on to win this series and, you know, possibly win a championship. There are ways away from that. But if that were to happen this spring, I think they might revisit that tweet a little bit later.
Well, that just inspired them, clearly. Compare. You mentioned you spent a few years in the SJHL with Estevan. Compare the rivalry Saskatoon PA versus one that you'd be familiar with prior to this year, of course, Estevan Weyburn.
Yeah, Estevan Weyburn was similar. I mean, it was the two cities are very close together, only about an hour, and they call it the Highway 39 rivalry, and up here, I guess it's the Highway 11 rivalry. So, yeah, I definitely saw a lot of animosity between the Wings and the Bruins. I was fortunate when I was in Estevan, the Bruins had very good teams, especially my first year when they won the championship. So the Bruins won the Highway 39 Cup both years when I was there. I think Weyburn just won it this past year. But the best rivalry I was a part of, guys, in Estevan was easily Estevan-Flin Flon. I mean, the Bruins and the Bombers, they played in the league final, seven-game thriller of a series that Estevan won. And then they played the next year in the first round just last year, and Flin Flon won in seven. So that Bomber-Bruin rivalry probably the best rivalry I've been a part of, and it's kind of developed out of nowhere with them playing in the league final and then meeting the next year and all the stuff that went on and off the ice, and how it's funny how that works. You know, you could develop a rival that's so far away from you. It was about a 9-hour bus ride, but that one was a lot to be a part of for sure.
And the Bombers just keep going, Nolan. They look like they could win the league again. A hell of a series they're coming up between them and the Battlefords. Now, I've always been a fan, Nolan, of your general manager of the Raiders, Curtis Hunt. Very smart dude, a smart hockey man. You know, you're not dead yet. You're still going to try to, be the big underdog and have an upset here against the powerhouse Saskatoon Blades. But what do the Raiders look like next year? Because Curtis Hunt always has plans.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're still a younger team, and you could argue they're still going through a bit of a rebuild here. They've had a good year, competitive year. They wanted to get back in the playoffs, and they've done that. But they've got a lot of prospects coming through. First of all, there's guys that have played regular roles this year. Luc Mraz, Oli Chenier. You got guys like Dugan Peterson and Tyrone Sobrey on the back end. Sobrey's been very strong here in the playoffs. Peterson's going to play tonight. But they've got a nucleus of young guys coming along this year, and then they've got a number of prospects coming up. Daxon Rudolph on defense, right-handed shooting defenseman. Those are always tough to find. He's a grade-A prospect. Ty Meunier, Zach Boychuk, all those guys are traveling with us here for this series. And so they've got a number of guys coming up, and if those prospects next year can kind of supplement what they already have, guys that are already playing regular roles, I think this team will continue to progress. And I know the consensus is, and maybe 2-3 years from now, they'll be competing for another championship after winning one in 2019.
Luc Mraz, Regina kid?
Yeah, Grand Coulee, I believe.
Oh,
I
think close
that's
enough.
A suburb of Regina, yeah.
We'll
yeah.
take it. I thought I recognized that name. What has Curtis's approach generally been? Like, the makeup of the roster, is that primarily Saskatchewan kids, or does he go wherever the players are?
Yeah, I haven't been privy to, the behind-the-scenes drafting and approach, but I can tell you that, just based on my time here, the prospects I mentioned, Rudolph, Meunier, and Boychuk, those are all Alberta kids. And so I don't think it's just Saskatchewan. I think if you look at their roster, there are a good nucleus of Saskatchewan-born players on the roster. A couple of Manitoba guys as well. So being a Winnipegger, I like those guys. Sloan Stanek's had an excellent year in his 20-year-old season. Braden Doobie's another Manitoba kid. So it's just without having the hometowns in front of me here off by heart, it's mostly
bad.
Prairie kids on this roster. I think it's just, I think they do their due diligence. They try to bring in the best prospects that they can.
We saw the fan support. We saw a lot of images from the Art Hauser back when the Raiders were playing for a league championship not that long ago. What's the fan support been like during this playoff run?
In Prince Albert and here in Saskatoon, it's been excellent. I know game three was standing room only. I think only about 300 standing room tickets left. And game four was similar. Right around that 2,900 mark was both crowds, games three and four. I think a sellout's just past 3,000, so smaller rink. Obviously, it was packed. And actually, a funny story, Jason Spezza was scouting for the Penguins at both games. He came into the media room. He actually said, he looks like he could still play, by the way. I guess he just retired, right? But he said he actually bought a ticket because he wanted to be able to sit rather than stand. A lot of people stand at the Art Hauser Center, so... Yeah, it's been a really cool atmosphere to be a part of, and it's unfortunate the Raiders couldn't get one at home. And then here, too, guys, tonight, game five, I think they're looking at about 10,000, and they've opened the upper bowl. Right. So both fan bases have been engaged.
Nice.
Now, Nolan, you're from Winnipeg. Are the Jets going to wake up?
Well, you know what, Don? Les Lazarick's here in the press box with me too, another Winnipegger, but no, they've had a great year. It just seems like they've had their playoff issues. I don't think Colorado is a good matchup for the Jets at all, quite honestly, especially if they're on the road. Especially with Colorado losing the first round last year, they'll be in a bad mood. Jets obviously lost in the first round last year. I think they've got the pieces, Don, to go on a playoff run. I just don't like the matchup with with Colorado. But it'd be great to get into the second round, especially with, you know, some of the ticket attendance issues that came up this year. It'd be great to see them thriving again and going a long playoff run.
Well, Nolan, good luck to you tonight in your play-by-play call with the big game tonight. And it's really cool to hear that, you know, like Pete was mentioning and yourself, that 10,000 fans.
That's not tonight. Bad.
That's great for news for the Western Hockey League, because some of the other venues, the attendance has been a little bit disappointing.
Hmm.
So far, and but there's something special, like you were talking about Flin Flon and Esfand. There's something special, and always has been, and always will be, when the Blades play the Raiders, particularly in the playoffs. It looks like it's like you were saying, Pete, Warriors and Broncos.
Yes, they're going head to head next round.
I mean, does that excite you at all, Nolan? The Warriors and Broncos.
Warriors and Broncos, yeah. I mean, I was a bit surprised that Moose Jaw swept Brandon. I know Moose Jaw's a great team with a lot of future NHLers, but thought it'd be a little closer. I think you could argue Swift Current's the favorite to win the conference, guys, just with the moves they made. Mm. Connor Geeky, I think, could play in the NHL today. Obviously, he spent some time there at the start of the year, I believe, right? So, you know, Swift Current to me is a very, very tough out at a deep team, but, you know, Moose Jaw's had a great year as well. So, that'll be a series to keep an eye on.
Thanks a lot, Nolan. Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
And we're back with Sports Cage. Don Hewitt with my good friend Pete. Bob Strum will be joining us now on the line from Las Vegas. This past October 5th, Bob Strum was officially inducted into the Regina Sports Hall of Fame. Bob was the general manager of the Regina Pats for 6 years and did nothing but win, with an incredible 328 victories over that span. Simply put, he was clearly the best general manager of his era in the Western Hockey League. Bob had the best CHL team in Canada with the Pats back in 1980, of course, with Doug Wickenheiser, but didn't win the Memorial Cup because the bad boy, then Peterborough Pete coach Mike Keenan, threw a game versus Cornwall to eliminate Regina in that terrible old round-robin format. Bob won gold for Canada back in 1982 with the juniors. He started the hockey craze in Vegas, to be honest, and has worked with numerous NHL teams, including Columbus and Detroit. He still works with professional hockey teams in both North America and Europe, providing a scouting service, and he's one of the best at it because, you know, none of these teams can be everywhere or anywhere when in terms of unearthing hockey players. So welcome to the cage, Bob. You know, I was watching March Madness, and with the transfer portal now in the NCAA college basketball, all teams have to know, number one, who are the best high school players in the U.S. or Canada. Of course, they come down to the U.S. to play high school, the best players in basketball. And number two, who are the best players playing at other schools who want to transfer? So bottom line, these schools can't do it all. It's impossible. So they hire people like you, I'm assuming, to give them information, except, of course, in your case, it's hockey. Does that describe, Bob, what you do now?
Yeah, I'm, you know, I do consulting to various people in North America and also in Europe, and yeah, I'm constantly watching the American League, the NHL, not so much the amateur. It's hard to get access to that, but I do watch the World Junior and stuff. So yeah, it's that's my life. Hockey's my life, always has been, and hopefully will be for more of a time, you know?
Well, I know if I was running a team, I'd hire you, and I'd ask you who's good, because you sure know what you're talking about. Let's get into who's hot and who's not. A couple of weeks before the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, Bob, and around here, of course, the Winnipeg Jets are the closest NHL team to Regina. They finally have won this week prior to a long losing skid. That's not expected after the Jet GM Kevin Cheveldayoff picked up players like Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan for a run. So what do you think is going on in Winnipeg?
Well, Well, they played. They get. You know, they were probably concerned about Rick Bonus. You know, their coach. They were rolling under him, and then he had to go back to Winnipeg with a medical issue. So, but they on paper, they've got a really good club, probably as good a team as they've had in years. And their problem is there's about seven or eight teams in the West that have a chance to win it, and four of them are going to be out after the first round, and you hope mm-hmm. it's not Winnipeg. But with Hellebuck, they've got the X factor if he's at his best. But you know, there's Demko in Vancouver and this and that. Although the Central, you know, Ottinger in Dallas, and I don't know if Colorado's guy. I don't know if Gorgiev is the guy for Colorado, but it's going to be, the playoffs are going to be as good as they've ever been, and let's not forget about UC Saros in Nashville. I'd hate to get them in the first round. Mm.
Isn't that right?
The Central, the Pacific, you got LA, Vegas, Edmonton, and Vancouver by the looks of it. And, you know, Vegas, if Hurdle and Stone come off the LTIR for the playoffs, Vegas is going to be a handful, you know?
Well, that's an interesting question about what's going on in your city in Vegas. I mean, is there going to be a huge uproar if injured captain Mark Stone suddenly shows up for the first game of the playoffs, Bob? Or would that be outrageous, or would they wait till the second game, or what would be the reaction if he suddenly comes back?
Well, Hurdle's going to play for sure. Let's get that out of the way. Yeah. He's skating. He's practicing right now. They just don't have any room for him under the cap. Stoney, I don't know. I mean, it's a ruptured spleen, but if you know Mark Stone, and if he gets the clearance from the doctors, he can play with pain. He always has. Yeah. And if they get those two guys back up front, their defense now is healthy, and it'll come down. Hilly's had an up-and-down year after winning the Stanley Cup, so it looks like Thompson's going to have to be the guy, and he's been really good lately.
Okay, well, we'll see if they can repeat as Stanley Cup champions. Of course, lots of Maple Leaf fans, as you well know, Bob, in Saskatchewan.
Careful.
Even our own Pete Pascoe. Do you want to ask the question?
Well,
can the Leafs go anywhere?
Catch him in the first round, because you won't see him after that.
Well, that just answered my question. Is it safe to say under Brad Treliving, that team may have taken a step backwards? I'm not blaming Brad specifically.
I think Tree's done a great job. Domi and Bertuzzi are playing. You know, he made the change on the back end. They got Edmondson, if he's healthy, and McCabe. And, you know, it'll come down to their. If Samsonov seems to be the guy, but is he the guy? You know, I don't know. They're going to get a tough opponent in the first round in that division, no matter who they get. So it's just, you know, like I said, I mean, there's seven or eight teams in the West, maybe not that many in the East, but it's going to be a tough run, and the first round's going to be as good as it's ever been, ever.
I agree.
Seems to change week by week in terms of who Canada's best hope is of bringing the cup back home. I think we can probably eliminate the Leafs from that discussion right now, but is it Edmonton? Is it Vancouver? Or who's the best Canadian team?
Well, Vancouver has the goaltending. If Demko's healthy, then they have the goaltending. But Edmonton's, you know, I mean, at some point in time, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl have to win a Stanley Cup, don't they? Or take a run at it. And if I had to pick a team out of Canada, I would say that the Oilers have the best chance of getting her done. And it's a matter of, you know, whether their star players can make it happen. Yeah, you know, Skinner is a playoff goaltender. We still don't know that.
That's right. I think that's the big question mark is Stuart Skinner. I would agree, Bob. Now, back to the Canucks. They added Elias Lindholm from Calgary just prior to the trade deadline, but he's not working out for Rick Tocchet. Why isn't he working out right now, Bob?
We have a philosophy in hockey management that sometimes you try too hard to build the perfect team. And when you do, there's times when you go past the point of no return. And, you know, just from afar and watching, they didn't need Lindholm. They were rolling. They didn't need to try and plug him in, change up their lines. And now talk. I mean, I've seen Vancouver a couple times lately, and they got a different lines every night. And by this time of year, you'd like that to be settled, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder, I mean, talk it. Wants drive, he wants grit, he wants mucking along the walls, and his star player is doing it right now, Peterson for him right now, but maybe Lindholm just isn't that kind of player for him.
Well, I mean, if he's content to settle in the three hole behind Peterson and Miller, then that's a pretty good third line center if he's prepared to do that job. But Petey really has, you know, he'll be ready to go in the playoffs, but since he signed the $100 million deal or whatever it was, he's kind of resting on his future right now. I saw him here twice, here and then in Arizona, but he's a great player. He's a franchise player. He's got to play that way. Miller's a handful. Besser's had a great season. Again, can he score in the playoffs? So I think that there's as many question marks about Vancouver as there is any of the other teams. And quite honestly, nobody's got a 1-2 punch like David and Dreisaitl if they're at their best. And so we'll see. You know, if Vegas plays Hurdle with Eichel, that'll be, if they play him on the wing with Eichel and Marchessault, that'll be as good a line as there is in the playoffs.
Not bad at all. Bob, Don mentioned earlier you've done some work for the Blue Jackets, so I need to try to wrap my head around what's going on in Columbus. They just can't seem to get out of their own way.
Well, yeah. You know, I can't share what I know, quite honestly, so I apologize. But
it's a mess.
They keep getting in their own way. So, Johnny Gaudreau has been very average, you know, has not been an impact player for them. Their best players have been the young Russians, you know. Before Chinnikov got hurt, the Russian line was their best line, Chinnikov, Voronkov, and Marchenko. And their goaltending has been okay. I think Tarasov's the guy of the future, but Merzlikin's been good. I don't know. And now they're bringing up guys left and right from Cleveland. They got lots of injuries, and it's just, the same old story. I can't think of the saying, but it's, I think Yogi Berra said it, deja vu all over again. You know?
Now, you, living in the city where the Stanley Cup also hangs out, certainly this season, what's hockey been like in the desert? People were kind of wondering if this was going to fly, and by all accounts, it's certainly working in Vegas.
Hey, you know what? The boys called me when Vegas was awarded. My media buddies back there in Canada, I still have some, and they all called me and said, how is the NHL hockey going to go in the desert? Well, you know, in the 90s when I ran the Thunder, I mean, on weekends, we had 9, 10, 11,000 people at the games. Now, our average was 7 or 8 because we had to play midweek games and it's a weekend town. But, I knew it was going to be a huge success here. There's a lot of, and when I came here in 93, it was, there was 800,000 people. Now there's over 2 million. And even in our games in the 90s, we had all kinds of NHL jerseys in the crowd. There's a lot of supplanted people here that are hockey fans from other parts of the country. And there was no question it was going to be a success. Now, I'd be lying to you if I said it was going to be as successful as it has been, but they've done a great job here. They've done an unbelievable job from the pregame show to the drop of the puck to the competitive team they have. Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee have done a great job of, they're in win now mode. There's nothing about, they've traded a lot of their draft picks and future picks, and they just operated on the win now mode from day one. And they were very fortunate to get Marc-Andre Fleury in the expansion draft originally. And then they've done a fantastic job. They really have. There's no other way to describe it. I mean, when you win a championship in a major pro sports league in 6 years, that's an accomplishment.
Oh, it is, and that's what hasn't happened in Phoenix. They haven't had winning hockey. Do you think, Bob, of course, they're talking now about, you know, we're going to win a land bid, North Phoenix, to put a new rink in for the Coyotes. Do you think if the Coyotes ever won, that Phoenix would start packing arenas for NHL hockey?
Well, right now it's a minor league setup. So, you know, who wants to go play in a... You know, the college guys out of Minnesota were playing in front of 10,000 people, and now they're playing in front of 4,000 people. I mean, if it was me, if I was a draft pick and high draft pick in Arizona interviewed me, I'd say, don't pick me because I'm not playing here. I'm going to finish out my eligibility and go where I want. You know, especially mm-hmm. if I was a college kid. Well, why? The way the rules are, if you go to school for 4 years, get your degree on I'm not sure exactly what the date is. It might be July 15th or August 15th. I'm not sure. But then you can go wherever you want. I mean, Adam Fox did it to Calgary. Other guys have done it. So I wouldn't want to play. I mean, why? I'm being brutally honest with you. And they were off to a good start. They've got some talent there. But they settled into a minor league culture, and that's the way they're playing.
Bob, I don't know if you were apprised, but the Pats just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the 74 team, the Memorial Cup champs.
Yeah.
Do you keep in touch with the guys from your years?
Oh, yeah. I've been very fortunate. I was so fortunate. The players and the people that were involved and Grimmer, Gerkach, Al Tour, Bobby Lowe's, on and on, and Evan Marquardt, on and on and on. I saw Sally when I was up there holding. Yeah, lots of guys. When you win together, you walk together for life, you know, and that's the old saying, but it's truly true when it comes to the Pats and that era that we had there, the group that we had, for sure.
That was quite a crew, no doubt about it. Is that the one regret, not getting all the way with that team?
Well, you know, I mean, we had a chance in 80, and, you know, we didn't play our best until the end, and the way the setup was, obviously Peterborough didn't want to play us, so, you know, they had their choice, and then they ended up losing the final to Cornell anyway, so tough on them. Huh. And then, you know, I mean, I can tell you that the wins, the championships that you had, don't come into your mind as often as the ones that slipped away. And let's not talk anymore about 84, but that was a hell of a team.
Well, I have a good friend, Bob, who brags to this day that when Mike Keenan threw the game against Cornwall, when he was coaching Peterborough, he brags to this day, Bob, that he's the first guy that threw an egg at the Peterborough bench way back then.
Karma got him. They lost the final anyway, so...
That's right. Now, if you had to pick one team, Canada or U.S., to win the Stanley Cup, it's pretty hard to do. But if you had to pick one team, who would you pick?
Well, I mean, on paper, Carolina's got the best team. Florida, I would have said Florida a month ago, and they've kind of gone in the tank lately. Looking at the odds, the sleeper team is Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
That's his back, boys, and Vasilevskiy's a wall pretty well, and they've got the star power. You know, Hedman, Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, and so on with the experience a couple times already. Don't sleep on Tampa.
Hmm. Yeah, and do they have the best coach for the playoffs in the NHL, Tampa?
No. Coop is as cool as the other side of the pillow, boys, and he's been through it numerous times. He's got the longevity. He's amazing with his guys. You know, they've had some rough spots this year, but he always seems to know which buttons to push. He's got a pretty cool demeanor publicly. I'm sure in the room he goes off the odd time, that's a given. But, you know, really... They are going to be tough to beat in a seven-game.
Yeah, I believe it. Bob Strom,
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. We hope to have you on maybe halfway through the playoffs and see where we're at. We always appreciate your intelligent comments on hockey. A Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Saskatchewan's best coverage of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is on the Sports Cage, right here on the mighty 620 CKRM.
Sports Cage, everyone. I'm Pete Pasco. Don Hewitt is along. And joining us now on the Western Pizza Hotline from Edmonton, I believe he's in Edmonton today, is color man for the Elks broadcast on 630 CHED. Dave Campbell joins us. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And I can confirm that I am in Edmonton, where it snowed quite a bit today. But hey, it's April in the prairies. So,
really snow? I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
Terrible. We're basking in the sunshine, by the way, in Regina, Dave.
Well, bring that over here as soon as possible. We're supposed to get freezing rain tomorrow and then rain on Sunday, but it's gonna smarten up, I think, by Monday. So that's okay.
We end up getting your weather, by the way. The way it works, Moose Jaw gets Calgary weather, Regina gets Edmonton weather. So don't worry, we'll get it.
Mm-hmm. Looking there forward to that. We're, of course, going to cover the Elks situation with you in detail, but I think first I want to throw out a question regarding the other major sports franchise in town, the Oilers. Are folks starting to get excited about the potential of a deep playoff run?
I think the excitement level is always there, and considering a 2-9-1 start when it was really uncertain whether this team would actually make the playoffs, and now they're 1 point away from clinching a playoff spot. If they get a point tonight against the Avalanche, of course they want two, but a point would clinch a playoff spot. Yeah, I think there is excitement, but I do think there is some a little bit nervous anticipation too. And I think the 5-0 loss to the Stars in Dallas on Wednesday kind of shook a bit of the confidence of some Oiler fans. And I think this is a team that has played under Chris Knobloch, and they have the best record in the NHL since he took over. They've played a much more poised, mature, patient type of game. But, you know, we have seen the Oilers throughout not just this season, and they played a lot like this during the first 12 games, but we have seen in the past where, and in the Stanley Cup playoffs as well, where they play kind of an erratic game in their own end, and they have this implosion, and then their best players kind of go south on them, and they end up losing playoff series. So I think it's just, you know, raises a little bit of a yellow flag but with that performance, by going, okay, well, we kind of saw the same thing again. So I think it's important tonight they get back on the rails and play a much cleaner type of game against another very good team in the Avalanche.
Is goaltending, and it seems like talk about that every year when we talk about the Oilers, is goaltending the big X factor still? We saw Jack Campbell came in, got paid a nice salary, but was not up to the task. Is Stuart Skinner the guy, or are they still trying to figure that out?
We're going to find out.
I think that they have full confidence in Stuart Skinner, who, look, we think back to a year ago, did not have a very good performance in the playoffs. I can think of maybe two games in total where he actually gave the Oilers a chance to legitimately win games. And other than that, he really struggled. But, I mean, everyone struggled early on. That was in net, and even Calvin Pickard in the early going. But Stuart Skinner has been a big part of why this team is going to the Stanley Cup playoffs again, and why this team could be a threat. And I think he's taken his game to another level. Now he has to repeat it. He's only 25, you know, and that's something that we got to think about. But, you know, he's much more mature, I think, for his age. He thinks the game well. He thinks life well. He's been reading books on stoicism and things like that. So he's a real deep thinker. Mm. And Pickard has played really well this year in the times that he has played. And, you know, we're going to see him down the stretch here play, I think, quite a few games in the final eight. And I think Jack Campbell could be the wild card here in this. You know, when Bakersfield season is over, or when the Oilers choose to call up, when we're able to call up players in the postseason and bring in the Black Aces, so to speak, I think Jack Campbell could be a real wild card. So, you know, I think it's a concern, but I think it's less of a concern compared to earlier in the season. I think my concern is is how they play in their own end, and can they play that defensive style of hockey that they need, that goal prevention, and maybe a little bit of speed and maybe a little bit of toughness. But I don't think goaltending is the most pressing issue with this team. I actually think it's one of their strengths.
Now, as you well know, Dave, we're working on the Elks broadcast. The Eskimos began way back in 1949, and from there, you know, public ownership really worked. It was fine, but I feel it's going to private mainly because the team's been so bad, more so than any sort of ownership structure. I don't know how you feel about that. But what's the latest? We talked to Farhan from TSN a little earlier about what's going on in Edmonton. What's the latest with who's going to be the new owner of the Edmonton Elks?
Yeah, I think over the next couple of months, we're gonna have that answer revealed to us. What we know from the board chair, Tom Richards, he spoke early last week when the team announced their 75th anniversary plans for the opener against the Riders on June 8th. They have 20 non-disclosure agreements signed. So that's with individuals, it's single owners, a group, ownership groups. So there definitely is a lot of interest in the team. And I think at some point soon you're going to see that list whittled down to a short list. And I think the goal is to, I think they would like to have this wrapped up by the season and season opener, mm-hmm. regular season home opener against the Riders on June the 8th. You know, to me, to have 20 interested parties in a brand and in a team that has struggled over the last five seasons is pretty impressive to me.
For sure.
You know, to your point, you know, the struggles of the team have definitely contributed to the losses of this team that they've endured over the last, you know, three, four seasons. They're going to lose another $4 million this year. Their stabilization fund, which was up to about $15 million, has been cut in half. And, you know, community ownership is great when things are, you know, when the waters are calm. But when they're not, it can't withstand this type of crisis. I mean, they're going to run out of money in a couple of years if things don't change. And that's why I think we're in this predicament, is they need something that's going to be more sustainable long term. And I mean, look, I mean, you have a form of community ownership in Regina with the Riders. You know, I mean, this is how it works for, you know, I'll use the Elks here. I mean, you have 85 shareholders, you pay $10, you get voting rights. But these are no means that, I mean, they're meant to, you know, pump in money at any point in the season, right? I mean, that's not what it's for. It's more nonprofit than anything. You got a board of directors with a board chair and nine others that volunteer, basically. And, you know, it's great when things are going fine and the waters are calm, but when they're not, this is a structure that is not sustainable. And we have seen other teams in the league. I mean, the Lions at one point were community owned. Now they're private owned. They've been that way for a while. The Stampeders were in the same boat in the past as well. So, you know, it just comes down to the bottom line, is that they're losing money, they're bleeding money, and they have to have it stop. And I think you're going to see, you know, definitely private ownership come in. And I don't think this is a sale. I think this is just an ownership transfer. I wouldn't be surprised if the new group signs a long-term agreement with the team, like maybe a five-year agreement. The board of directors stay on for a while. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if the new owner or owners agree to pump in some, you know, capital for a new stadium down the road.
Right. I mean, your stadium is too big. We all know that. It was great in its day. Now, it's interesting. As you well know, former Rider president and CEO Jim Hobson passed away 4 days ago. And on Wednesday, we had a Sports Cage tribute to Jim. And when Jim took over the Rough Riders in 2005, he said, why can't we be like, and we being the Saskatchewan Roughriders, why can't we be like the Edmonton Eskimos, who are the absolute class of the CFL? And, of course, Jim did a tremendous job in building up the Roughriders. So I've asked you this, Dave. I mean, if the team gets its act on the field and starts winning, the fans are sort of used to not going. Will they come back? Well, I mean, it's been such a great franchise for decades. Will they come back if you start winning?
You know, I would think that will help for sure. I think the organization as a whole has to win the confidence of the fan base back. And I think I think the perfect storm kind of hit the team, you know, around COVID. And, you know, they didn't play in 2020 and there were big losses. And, you know, a lot of teams suffered losses, of course, because they didn't play in 2020. But, you know, you have, they changed their name, which, you know, in the beginning, I think was a real hit. And then the losses fouled up and people were pointing to the name change, which I don't know if I would agree with that correlation, but it's there for sure. But you know, the team lost games. They had COVID, you know, issues as well, and vaccine passports, and people lost confidence in Brock Sunderland, the GM, and at the time Chris Preston, the president. And then, unfortunately, you know, Victor Kui came in with big ideas, but didn't really come up with any substance. And you know, they changed coaches from Jamie Elizondo to Chris Jones, and he takes on three roles and you don't see wins, and people are kind of going like, what's going on here? Like, why would I bother? I think wins would definitely help. And, you know, when you look at the first four games before their first bye week in week five, if they can at least go 2-2, if they get off to a 3-1 start or even 4-0, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that would definitely help the confidence of the fan base. I think a bad starts have been really, really tough for this team, and obviously that's, you know, good starts, bad starts, whatever, it's how you play. And, you know, for me, Labor Day on, is that's the most important part of the season. But I think to gain some confidence with the fan base, yeah, wins gonna have to come. They have to come early, and they have to find a way to be consistent and sustain that.
Well, following up on that, Dave, do the Elks have to make the playoffs for Chris Jones to last beyond this year, disregarding his contract situation, which I can't particularly understand? But is this make or break time for Chris?
Oh, absolutely. I think he knows it. I think they need to win in 2024. He's not around in 2025. And does that mean win the Grey Cup? I don't necessarily think that, you know, that's what it means. Does it mean getting back into the playoffs? Yep. Does it mean, you know, maybe having a chance to play in the East Final for a Grey Cup, the West Final for a Grey Cup? Yep. I think this team has to get back into the postseason. I think they got to win more games at home. They just got to win, period. And I think Chris Jones knows that. And you look at the moves that he's made. I mean, he brought in McLeod Bethel-Thompson to be a starting quarterback, which has ruffled some feathers here with the fan base, because they look at what Trey Ford accomplished last season and his style of play and his excitement, and that kind of was a head scratcher and made a lot of people, a chunk of the Elks fan base upset. Although, I mean, you look at the move, it makes some sense. And this is about Chris Jones. You know, he's trying to preserve his job, like any other coach or GM in pro sports. So they got to win. They definitely have to win. And I think it's make or break time. And I don't know if Chris Jones could even survive a 1-3 or 0-4 start, for example. And I don't know. I mean, that's a question that kind of comes into my head occasionally. And you know, that's why I think a good start would be the proper footing for this organization, for the team, for the fan base. But there's no question, it's win or bust this year for Chris Jones.
I'm glad you mentioned the Trey Ford situation. I know a lot of fans were upset that they made the move to bring in McLeod Bethel-Thompson, but G. Roy Simon's comments really, really intrigued me, where he basically said, hey, Trey's a great athlete. He's going to be a great quarterback. He's not ready to lead a team yet. What did you think when you heard that?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think when, you know, I remember the article, and I remember when the post was sent out, and from Three Down Nation, and they do some good work. I think you have to read the context of the article, and I don't think G. Roy Simon was trying to disparage Trey Ford in any way. I do think G. Roy Simon was saying, we like Trey Ford, we drafted Trey Ford, we believe in Trey Ford, but at present, we don't think he's ready to take the reins. And look, he came out like gangbusters last year. He had three incredible starts where he was honestly had numbers that were unbelievable. And then he kind of fell back down to earth, but treaded water, I think, in the next three games. And let's, you know, the club were 4-2 in that stretch, and they won four or five games in that stretch, and then they lost their last four games. Now, they did play the four best teams in the league, and the Lions, the Argos, the Alouettes, and the Bombers. But I think you saw some warts show up in Trey Ford's game that I think were a little concerning. Not all on Trey Ford, it never is all in one person. But, you know, the decision-making wasn't quite as, you know, what wasn't there like you would hope it is, and or hope it was. And, you know, he just, I think teams were scheming against him better, and they were prepared for his running ability better, and I think he kind of second-guessed himself.
That's true.
At times, and, you know, numerous occasions he said, look, you know, I'm very new to this to this game, the pro game. I'm still learning a lot of things, and you got to remember, he only played about 30 games in U Sports, and that included a COVID season that knocked out a season. So he is relatively young still, and he is learning. But here's the thing. I think McLeod Bethel Thompson can help him, and I think he's taken a lot. They've talked a lot, and I think he's trying to take as much information, and we'll see when camp rolls around if that relationship will grow. I certainly hope it will. But he's about, you know, we saw Trey Ford last year. You know, I would say he's about 40, 50% of his potential. You know, maybe closer to 40, and yet he wowed a lot of people. But I think it just needs to be refined a little bit more. And I think McLeod Bethel Thompson can do that.
Well, that's a great point. Well, after 5 years in Saskatchewan, Dave, Jason Shivers is now Edmonton's assistant head coach, defensive coordinator, and the linebackers coach. As far as I know, it's the first time as a head coach that Chris Jones has not worn the two hats as the head man and the defensive coordinator. He seems to be freeing himself up. Do you think that's going to help him this season?
I think it will. He was really stretched thin, taking on all those roles, and there was a reason why. I mean, they were paying so many coaches that they let go of at GMs. I mean, at one point they had Jason Moss on their football operations cap, and then they had Noel Thorpe on their cap, then they had Brock Sunderland, and then they had Jamie Elizondo. They had no money to play with, so they had to give one man three roles, and I think it was too much. You know, it was a cost of doing business kind of thing. So, but now they're free of the cap, and they don't have anybody on their cap, I believe. And there's really no point for Chris Jones to have three roles. So the obvious role to give up is defensive coordinator. And I think, you know, the planets and the stars kind of aligned here. And with Jason Shivers becoming available, I think it's a great scenario for Chris Jones, who trusts Jason Shivers, who has very much, you know, philosophically, they seem very aligned in how to implement a defense or how to run a defense. And I think it's going to, I hope it's going to work out well. And I think Chris Jones is going to be involved in the defense, but I don't think he's going to interject too much, as, you know, on game day. He's going to let Jason Shivers call what he believes. And, you know, for Jason Shivers, I think this is a great opportunity for him to kind of show that, hey, you know what, I can, under my protege or my mentor, I can thrive, right? And I'm looking forward to see what Jason Shivers can do. And, you know, I know it's been tough in Saskatchewan the last couple seasons. And again, I think the defense struggled at times under Jason Shivers, but I do think there were some gems under his watch. So this is a young defense still, and I think Jason Shivers, who is not that far removed from his playing days and is still a young head coach in his own right, I think he can make some really good connection points for this defense.
And he's certainly not inheriting an empty cupboard by any means. I mean, oh, to be fair, Ed Gainey looked like he may have been done last year, and he's no longer there. Niles Morgan, middle linebacker, looks like he's going to be a stud for years.
Yeah, he does. He does. And you know, I think the important thing for Niles is he stayed healthy last season. He missed two or three games the year before in 22. He only played six games. And when he played those six games, he was all world. But I think the key for him is he stayed healthy, and that's important. You have Lucas Purefoy coming back. I think that's a key signing as well. I thought he was really good last year when he played. He did miss a few games with injury. You know, the secondary remains young, although you're bringing back a lot of players that will be in their second year. Kai Gray was the West Division nominee for most outstanding rookie. You know, Darius Bratton, Marcus Lewis before he got hurt. I mean, he didn't play the full season. I don't even think he played half a season, and he got four interceptions. And I think the biggest question is, can they stop the run up front? And they let a lot of sacks go out the door. I mean, with Jake Zarezna's 12 in the Curly Gittens trade with the Argos, and then they did re-sign A.C. Leonard, who had 12 sacks last year as well. So they're counting on some players within their system and some players that they assigned, like Robert Condici, who was a first-round pick of the Arizona Cardinals not too long ago, or about, you know, nine years ago. Can he contribute? So I think for me, the biggest concern is the defense. You know, it's not necessarily the offense. I think their special teams, I don't think they're as bad as people want to make it the last couple seasons. Forrest Beatty is going to help the kicking game, and Javon Leak is going to help their return game big time. But to me, it's their defense. They gave up too many yards, too many points, especially on the ground, and they got to find a way to stop that.
Thanks a lot, Dave. You are so good today, Dave, that we are giving you the Sports Cage Clutch Performance Award. That's how good you were, nice. Dave. Brought to you by Nick Service and Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. Call 781-1077. So, you know what, Dave? If you need a Gleaner, go get them. Head over there. Maybe they'll give you a discount for winning the award.
I was going to ask you what a Gleaner is, but I don't think either of us knows.
Anyway,
if you know, let me know, and I'll act upon it.
Yeah. And just a couple of things. Number one, A.C. Leonard is still a free agent, as far as I know, in the CFL. And Dave, it's going to be a biggie. Saskatchewan in Edmonton to start the 2024 season. That is so huge. Yep. But we've run out of time, unfortunately. Thanks for joining us, Dave. And thank you, Pete Pascal, for some outstanding questions and comments. And even your jokes during commercial breaks were, I thought, very good.
That's where they belong, commercial breaks.
And then we also found out that Alan Lee, Alan Lee is a triplet.
Yep.
Our board operator. Wow. Not everybody's a triplet. Anyway, that's it for Sports Cage, we'll be back on Monday with Brendan McGuire. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Today's Sports Cage has come to a close. Miss a segment? Download or stream the podcast now at sportscage.ca. Get your sports straight from the source. 620 CKRM.